Blog Talk Radio.
Eastern Standard Time. This is Off the Chain. I'm your host, Yvonne Mason, and that was one of my favorite songs, Happy. It puts me in the best mood even when I'm down, and it fits tonight's guest, and I'll tell you a little bit more about her shortly. But I did want to bring everybody up to speed. Y'all know how excited I get about this show because it's not my show. It belongs to all of y'all. It belongs to the listeners. It belongs to my guest. I could sit here and talk all night long and wouldn't get anywhere, but because my guests come back, they bring others, you guys listen in, you pass the word around, you listen in on the podcast, this show just keeps having a life of its own. This morning, when I ran the numbers, we are up to 80,814 listeners just on this show. Now, granted, they all don't listen to the live show, but they go in and they listen to the archive shows, and they listen to the other guests, and it's just amazing how this show continually grows. And Australia, thank you so much, because you're 96% of my listening base. And in return for that, I promote your blues band that I just absolutely adore, the Teskey Brothers, who are a rolled-up package of Otis Redding and B.B. King and Robert Johnson and Eric Clapton and Johnny Lang, and they should be on Bourbon Street instead of Australia. I wish they would come to the States because I would pay to go see them. They are that good. I mean, they sound like true Southern blues. So thank you, Australia, for being our biggest listening base. We appreciate y'all so much. And then when you add the podcast that I put this thing up on, it automatically goes up on iTunes and Stitcher and FM.com and TuneIn Radio and YouTube. And then I put it up on podcast.com, Podcast Garden, Mixcloud, SoundCloud, and Spreaker. When you add all of those numbers on a daily basis to the numbers from the show itself, we have reached 102,483 listeners to this show. The show's not even a year old. It will not be, it's not even 2 years old. Just turned a year old. It will be 2 years old in July. This is absolutely amazing for a show of this caliber. And again, it is so humbling, and I'm so proud of it. I'm so proud of the guests that keep coming back and the listeners that continue to listen and pass it along. So thank y'all so much. Now, put this on your calendars, ladies and gentlemen. On January the 5th at 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on the Investigation Discovery Channel, wherever you are, you will want to adjust it to your time zone and whatever provider you use. But on the Investigation Discovery Channel, they have a show called Married with Secrets. On January the 5th at 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, I will be on Married with Secrets, and I will be discussing Gerard Schaefer, who was Florida's first serial killer before Bundy, before Danny Rollin, and he had lots of secrets. He killed between 9 and 34 young women between 1966 and 1972. We will be discussing him, and if you want to get caught up to speed before the show, go to Amazon and pick up Silent Scream, because that is the true crime of what Schaefer did, and it is the story of nine of his victims. So January the 5th at 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on the Investigation Discovery Channel. Now, if you are too shy or live in another country and want to be heard on this show, go to AdvertiseCast.com and in the search engine look up Off the Chain. That is my show. You can get advertising for this show for literally pennies a day. I'm serious. I'm not out to gouge anybody, but I want people to be heard. I want people to succeed. And one of my clients just sent me a new ad. Her name is CeCe Chamberlain. She can be heard on iTunes and Google Play. She has a podcast called Inside Your Life with CeCe. And it's a podcast full of thought-provoking interviews, motivational, inspirational to inspire others and lift up your own soul. It has feel-good stories, conversations to strengthen the mind, the body, and the soul. And inspiration are far and between for many people, and we all know that. Daily life gets in the way. However, the Inside Your Life with CeCe podcast is the glimmer of hope in a world full of confusion and discouraging times, or just a tough day. CeCe interviews will entertain you, uplift you, and bring you the absolute best out of the world. And ladies and gentlemen, this time of year especially, this would be a good time to go listen to this podcast. You can hear it at www.podcast.com. Inside Your Life with CeCe, because there are many people out there during this silly season that are hurting, and to them it is not a happy time. So go and listen to Inside Your Life with CeCe at podcast.com. And again, if you want to get your product on this show, go to advertisecast.com and the search engine, type in Off the Chain, look at the pricing, send me your ad, or if you want me to produce the ad, there's a price for that too. Just tell me what you want, and I'll be happy to do it for you. And I will run it for a month, ladies and gentlemen. It doesn't matter if I have five shows a week, or if I have four shows a week, or if I have six shows a week. Your ad will be run every night that I run a show for a solid month. Doesn't get any better than that. Now, enough of that. Tonight's guest is an absolute hoot. She has been on my books for several months, because y'all know that I'm booked up 3 and 4 months ahead of time. In fact, we're already booked through the end of May for next year. We're now working on June. That's how far ahead we are booked now, and it's because of all of y'all. But anyway, author Violet Howe, she is the author of Tales Behind the Veil series and the Cedar Creek series. She enjoys writing romantic suspense, romantic women's fiction, and chick lit. She and her knight in shining armor live in Central Florida with their 3 adorable but spoiled dogs. See, I love her already because I have a Maltese that really believes he's a person. He's not a dog. When she's not writing, Violet is usually watching movies, reading, or planning her next travel adventure. She is a member of the Florida Writers Association and the Romance Writers of America. You can follow her ramblings on her blog, The Goddess Howe. Now, we're going to talk about that, The Goddess Howe. We are going to talk about how she came up with that. So without further ado, let me introduce you to our guest. Welcome, Violet. Thank you, my dear, for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
And we were talking before the show that you at one time wanted to do public speaking, so you took all the, as did I, took all the classes for public speaking, and it's not hard for you to get up in front of a crowd of people like me, you know, 300 to 1,015, it doesn't matter.
Right.
But this is your first time on the show when you're a little bit nervous. But
well, it's just a little bit uncertain of, you know, anytime you're doing something new and you're not familiar with what you're doing, you kind of are like, well, what if this happens or what if that happens or what if I, you know, what if I say something stupid?
I say something stupid on every show. Some nights I can't even put 2 words together.
Well, then that makes me feel better. The precedent has already been set, so that makes me feel better.
See, so don't feel bad, because that's why we call it Off the Chain. We never, ever know what's going to happen on the show. And you should have heard the ad that I did before this one with another author's book, Diane Mope. She wrote a book called The Supernatural Pet Sitter, and by the time that it was time for the show, I was tired, and I don't function after 2 o'clock in the afternoon well anyway, and I'm trying to do her ad, and it was such a tongue twister because the pet sitter's name is Piper, and she's pet sitting the supernatural pets, and some nights I'm just going, I can't even say this anymore, boys and girls, just let me start over. No worries there, honey. So let's talk about Miss Violet.
Okay. Now, what would you like to know?
I want to know how in the world you decided, or when you decided, or was this something that you wanted to do from the time you were little, to write these different genres?
Well, I had always been interested in writing. I have a diary from 3rd grade that has my plans for the summer were to get a tan and write my first novel. The tan I got, the first novel took quite a bit longer, but I was always writing stories and very much enjoyed writing throughout school, throughout high school and college, and it was something I kind of had in the back of my head that I always wanted to pursue, but I had several other careers that kind of took place first, and I think at some point I just kind of realized that if I wanted to do this, I might ought to get on it. So I, at the time, was teaching. I was teaching middle school, and I decided just to go ahead and jump into the deep end of the pool and pursue this full-time in 2012.
Wow, so you haven't been at it very long at all, a mere 5 years.
Yeah, I started doing a lot of freelance writing in the beginning as I was trying to get the novel written, and I published my first novel in 2015, and since that point I've really kind of gone away from the freelance writing and concentrated on novels full time.
Well, let me ask you this, and you're not the first teacher that I've had on here that left the profession and went into writing. Was teaching your first love? Is it something you miss? And you had to be an excellent teacher because you're an excellent writer. So you had to have loved teaching that part.
Well, thank you. I love teaching. As far as the actual act of teaching, I loved connecting with students. I loved that light bulb moment that they get when something clicks and they learn something. The last 2 years I was teaching, I taught history, which I absolutely love. And so I loved finding ways to engage them in history, finding exercises we could do. I found a lesson plan, for instance, in teaching students about civilization. I was teaching sixth grade, and teaching students about civilization and why the first civilization settled near water. And so we did a very simple exercise that I had found in a lesson plan where you have, you know, a bucket of water at the front of the room, and everyone in the room gets a spoon and a cup, and they have to get up and walk to the front of the room, get a spoonful of water, and they have to keep doing that until their cup's full. And very quickly, the students in the back of the classroom start protesting that, well, this is not fair because the people in the front of the classroom have shorter space to walk. They're, you know, I'm spilling my water. It takes me much longer. And so it was a perfect illustration to be able to say, there you go. That's why they live near the river. So I loved being able to find ways to illustrate something to them and engage them in learning. That part of teaching I miss, like, you know, being able to connect with students and being able to open their minds to something that they didn't see before or didn't understand before.
Well, to be able to use an example like that is amazing to me, because how many teachers would be that creative to say, okay, this is why we're doing this exercise. And then when the light bulb goes off, because the kids in the back of the room live farther away from the river, and the buckets don't get filled up because they get empty before they get back to the tents, that gave them a greater appreciation for why things were done.
Right. It gives them as much as possible a real-life application. Most people learn best when it's something that affects them or when it's something that they can relate to. And so, you know, we all have different learning styles, and some people learn better listening, and some people learn better reading, and some people learn better hands-on. And I found that if I could find a way to put them in the situation and find a way to let them relate to what was happening in history, then it made more sense to them why history unfolded the way it did.
I love it. I wish I'd have had you as my teacher. I'm going to tell
Now, I wish that I could have done just those types of activities all the time. Unfortunately, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of testing involved and a lot of things that aren't quite as hands-on and as much fun, but I very much enjoyed those exercises.
Now, that would have been a perfect test. Think about that, Violet. That
right?
would have been a perfect test for a student to explain the importance on a test of living near water.
It
would have. And they would have had fun doing it.
Right, right. It's. I think that that's, you know, being able to branch out in the ways that we test students is so important. And unfortunately, you know, our education system has kind of moved towards standardized testing, which doesn't work well for all types of learners and doesn't work well for all types of test takers. Uh-huh. And I wish that there were alternative options or maybe a variety of options for how we test, how we measure progress, and how we measure learning.
I think we do our students a disservice with standardized testing because we're not cookie cutters.
Right, right. Yeah. And the anxiety, sometimes even if the student knows the material, the anxiety and the pressure that's involved with that testing, you know, can make them not perform well on the test even though they know the material.
Who in the hell in the real world lives by speed test?
Exactly.
Really?
Exactly. We don't go through life with, like, multiple choice, make sure you fill in the bubble all the way, you only
yeah.
use the number two pencil. Yeah, exactly. So
I don't know what clown figured it up, but they ought to take them back and put them through the paces. But I thought I have a bitter taste in my mouth because of standardized stand. See, there I go. I can't talk. Because of the silly test. Because when my daughter was a senior, she had a baby at 17, and she had this baby over the Thanksgiving holiday. She had the baby on Tuesday. Thanksgiving was on Thursday. She went back to school on Monday. She maintained a BC average.
Wow.
But when she got ready to graduate, she failed their stupid graduation. Now, this was in Georgia, their stupid graduation test, which was a standardized testing So she failed it twice, and it was on nothing they learned through the year. She can put together a website better than I can. But she did not get a diploma. She got a certificate of completion. Now, this kid went back to school while she was raising a baby and kept her grades up, and because she didn't pass that stupid, silly test, they did not give her her diploma.
Aww.
I was not a happy mother. I let her
know. I bet I can understand that.
I was furious. But anyway, one of these days they'll get their head out of their butts and figure it out. Not every kid is a college-bound kid. We still need our VOTAC. And standardized testing doesn't prove anything except how stupid we really are.
meaning the people who give the test, not the kids who are
taking it. Exactly. No, the kids are beautiful. The kids are wonderful. Yeah, meaning the people that say, okay, you got to do standardized testing.
Just wanted to clarify that. We weren't saying the students.
No, the students. God love them. They have so much they have to deal with before they ever get out in the real world. No wonder they fail in the real world. Now, you have a blog called The Goddess How.
Yes.
How in the world did you come up with that, and why?
Well, calling myself the goddess has kind of been a tongue-in-cheek joke for quite some time. I think it started in high school, may have been college, but I think it started in high school. But I thought it was funny for some reason. If I introduced myself to someone, I would, you know, I would say hi and tell them my name, and then I would say, but you can just call me goddess.
I love it.
And it would, you know, usually get a laugh. And so it just kind of became this thing. It wasn't something where other people called me goddess. It was just something that I called myself. And when I decided that I was going to write a personal blog and kind of give little, you know, window into my life, and I wanted the blog to, my goal in writing, whether it's the blog or whether it's novels, I always want to make people think and make people laugh. That is my goal. And so with the blog, I wanted to just do just a glimpse of my life, whether that be personal stories of things that had happened or reviews of movies I'd seen or, you know, pictures I'd taken or trips we'd gone on. And so I decided that it would be the goddess How, almost like she's like not my alter ego, but kind of like this is the, you know, the I guess you would say the public side of me that I'm sharing, you know, the goddess How. And my husband even took it a step farther the last time that we changed our cell phone cell phone provider. He set it up, and so when they asked him the names for the caller ID, he set up the caller ID as the goddess How. So sometimes when I call people, I forget that, and I'll be talking to someone, you know, like at JCPenney or wherever, and they'll go, and your first name is goddess? And I'm like, no, my first name's not goddess. So it can cause some confusion sometimes, but I like it.
I love it. I love it. And you had a blog that you put up on November the 9th, and I read it, and I was just amazed. And when I read the title, I went, what is she talking about? And ladies and gentlemen, the name of this particular blog is Today I Will Marry My Husband Again.
Again.
Tell the folks about this, because this is, I think everybody should do this.
I would recommend it. Shortly before my husband and I were married, he was speaking with an older couple that we knew from our church, and they at that time had been married, I think, 52 years. I probably should ask her and clarify that now that I tell the story, but I think they had been married 52 years, and they shared with my husband that they had renewed their vows every year. And she was telling him how it really reminds you of the vows you took. It reminds you of the commitment that you made. It kind of keeps it fresh in your mind. It reminds you that this was a choice that you made. So all of the kind of romantic and, you know, relationship reasons that they did this. And her husband, who has an excellent sense of humor, he kind of piped in and said, if anyone told me that I had to spend the rest of my life with her, I would probably kill myself, but I can do a year at a time. And he's like, so every year I figure I can sign up for one more year. I'll do one more year. And they had done, you know, 52. So we kind of took that and ran with it. And I'm so happy that we have, because it does remind you. It reminds you every year as you say the vows. It's funny because we use the same, basically the ceremony wording that we had for our original ceremony. And it's funny how every year there seems to be something in there that I didn't remember hearing before, or that I hear it and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right, that was in there. And I mentioned in that blog that there's been years that it's been easier to do than others. I think with any relationship, you know, you have ups and downs, and you have times when it seems easier to get along with another person, or it seems easier to conquer whatever's happening in life at that moment. And there have been years that when that rolls around, it's not like, oh, how sweet, we get to renew our vows. It's been like, oh, God, that's coming up. But I think that in those years, that's when it's most important to do it. That's when it's most important to kind of remind each other of what you committed to, and remind each other of the promise that you made, and the fact that it is a choice. You know, we choose that person. We choose to say, I'm going to share my life with you. And I think sometimes, you know, we disappoint our partners disappoint us, life disappoints us, things happen, and I think sometimes it's easy to kind of lose sight of the fact that that's what we chose to do. And so I think, you know, renewing your vows every year, or saying those vows again, I know for us, has really kind of reminded us each year. And we get a kick out of it. We start, our anniversary is November 9th, and so we start usually around the end of September, kind of teasing each other with, you know, your lease is up soon. You might want to be on your best behavior here. I haven't decided if I'm signing up for another year. And we do it all in jest, of course. But yeah, it's been very nice. And we added in the element, because I'm a former planner, event planner. I was a wedding planner in event planning for 15 years. And so we added in the element of planning. So every other year, one of us plans. So you either get to be surprised or you get to plan each year. And it's been really fun to see, you know, what we've come up with, what we've surprised each other with, and what we've come up with, and the layer that adds to it. So it's
been
very nice.
Wasn't there 1 year when you thought your husband had forgotten?
Yes. Yes, and I didn't handle it well. We'd gone the whole day. Both of us had worked that day. And a lot of times we'll try to arrange it. We'll try to go out of town, or we'll try to do something where we're not working and we can spend the day focused on each other. But, you know, real life, that doesn't always happen. And so that particular day we had worked. I had been in a play, and I'd been having rehearsals relentlessly, and had been gone away from home a lot. And whenever it got to be evening, and he really hadn't said anything about what, you know, magical, wonderful, romantic thing he had cooked up, and he suggested that we go to dinner, and I really kind of I pouted. I was really kind of not being polite during dinner, because I thought he'd forgotten, and I thought he'd just kind of done this lame dinner rather than, you know, planning something earth-shattering. And after dinner, he mentioned my husband owns a painting contracting. He's a painting contractor. And so he does, whenever I'm in a play, he's very good about donating his time and services and helping the theater with painting. And so he mentioned that he needed to drop off paint at the theater. And I was so angry that, like, it's our anniversary. First, you didn't plan anything. We do this lame dinner, and now you're going to work? So, yeah, I probably was not the most lovely bride for that particular renewal. But when we got to the theater, he actually had done quite a bit of planning. The stage inside the theater was lit with these ficus trees, and the director for that play, who's a very, very dear friend of mine, he had talked to her and asked her to be there. And because theater is important to me, and because the show was important to me, and that's kind of where we were in life at that particular time, he had chosen to incorporate the theater, incorporate our dear friend who was the director. And so I ended up having to kind of apologize for my behavior, but he said his vows, so we made it past it. We signed up for another year.
But it was a defining moment in that he thought enough of how important the theater was to you. That's what I got out of it, was no matter how you felt getting there. He was going to get you there if he had to knock you in the head and drag you. He was going to get you there.
Kicking, drag me, kicking and screaming. And that's one of the things that I really like about the planning is that we are able to kind of incorporate those things. It very much kind of reflects where we are that year. Like we usually ask a friend, or we ask someone who has been instrumental in our life that year, or someone who we admire or look up to, and the location sometimes is, you know, just different places that we've chosen, different things that we've done that I think, like I said, it adds an extra layer to that.
Oh, and it builds so many memories because
yes.
You can go back and look at the pictures from the each year that you've renewed your vows and said, oh, that was a good year. Maybe not so much that year, but we got through it, and look what happened. And the memories that y'all have are priceless.
Well, and we kind of look at it as like, okay, that year's done. Now we start a new year. So it's, you know, even though obviously as the years go by, it builds up more longevity, but there's still, I guess kind of like with New Year's, how we kind of reset on New Year's and we're like, okay, this is a new year. You know, when January 1st rolls around, we kind of wipe the slate clean and think we're starting over. And we kind of do that like, okay, you know, if that was a tough year or we did go through some challenges or some valleys in that year's done. Now we're starting a new year. We're vowing for this new year. So, I definitely recommend it. I think it's a good idea.
And the thing is, Violet, you don't bring the baggage that's in the past to the present with you because you can't undo it. Whatever happened back there needs to stay back there, and so you just start off brand new and fresh.
Right.
I love
right.
it. I highly recommend it.
I do, too. Anytime we talk to someone that's engaged, I'm like, just so you know, we renew our vows every year, and I, you know, kind of tell them because I do think it's a good idea. I do think
absolutely.
It kind of reminds you of that commitment and keeps that commitment in the forefront. So
I love it. I love it. And see, you just answered the drama queen and the actress question that I had. Drama queen? I cannot imagine you being a drama queen.
I think every friend that I have would probably laugh that you would say that. I don't know. I feel like sometimes my life is a sitcom and everyone else gets the scripts except me, that maybe like I'm just kind of reacting to it. And I feel like sometimes we're in sweeps weeks or we're doing something, you know, where the viewership is evidently at a peak. But my life just tends to have really interesting things happen. And then from what others tell me around, the people around me say that I then tell those stories of what's happening in a very interesting way. I had a friend who told me one time that I'm the only person she knows who could stub my toe and have her waiting on the edge of her seat to see how the story ended. So in that respect, I'm a drama queen because there's just always something going on. There's always some kind of like wild, outlandish circumstances, even around the most mundane of tasks and routines. So
you need to hook up with my friend Taylor Dahl because it's strange things happen that only can happen to her. Not only can she stub her toe, but she can mess up her knee and bang her head and mash her finger all in the same instant.
And don't know how y'all stuff. It's, I mean, it's not all bad stuff. Sometimes it's good stuff. But I do. My life is very interesting, and it's ordinary. I mean, that's the Goddess How. The tagline on the Goddess How blog is the extraordinary life of an ordinary goddess kind of thing, because it's you know, I just have an ordinary life, but very interesting things happen.
I love
so.
It. You're not ever dull, that's for sure.
That's true.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, this lovely woman, for those of you who are Walking Dead aficionados, which I can't stand the show, but it bores me, you know, first 5 minutes I'm done with it. There's no plot, there's no nothing. They just go around killing each other and zombies. Okay, fine. But Violet went up to Senoa, Georgia, which was a sleepy little town in middle south Georgia for years and years and years. It was a blip on the map. If you passed through it and blinked your eyes,
you missed it.
Yeah. And I'm from Georgia, so I understand these small towns. But because this series is filmed in this sleepy little town, it's now become a tourist haven. So Violet goes to Senoa, Georgia. Now, tell me a story about what happened in Senoa, Georgia.
Well, let me, if I may, back up just a second.
Absolutely.
I disagree with you that it doesn't have a plot, and I'll tell you how I got hooked on The Walking Dead. My son and I both have sons. My son and I, oh my gosh, my husband and I both have sons who are the same age. That's actually how we met. Our sons were best friends, and so the sons kind of introduced us at a very young age, and that's how the two of us met. And as they were growing up, we had different shows that we would watch together or different things we would be involved in together. And as we were moving, we're coming out of their junior year of high school, both of the boys wanted to watch The Walking Dead. I had no interest whatsoever. I had no interest in zombies. I had no interest in watching this show. Everyone that I knew watched it, but I just had no interest in it. And so I kept tossing out other ideas for shows. And finally my husband said to me, he goes, you know, next year is their senior year. This is probably the last show we're all going to watch together. So cue the tears, cue the waterfall of tears. I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is the last show. Yes, I'll watch The Walking Dead. So we started watching it, and the characters are what got me. I really don't care one way or another about the zombies. The characters are what got me, and the storyline of what was happening to these people and how the character arcs of how this apocalypse was affecting everyone, and the fact that, you know, if you were a kind person who was selfless and giving before the apocalypse, then that's amplified now that you're still willing to risk your life for others. But if you were a person who was kind of self-absorbed, or you were a person who was, you know, cheating and out to scam others before, then that's amplified now. And so that's really what got me, was the storyline and the plots and the characters. And it got to the point, because, of course, the senior year of high school is a very busy time, and they both had girlfriends, and they both had friends, and they both had social lives and activities. And it got to the point where, you know, they were too busy to watch the show, and I would be like, okay, we're watching The Walking Dead Thursday night, right? And, you know, one of them would say, oh, I told the guys I'd go to the movie. And I'm like, okay, well, if you see a 7 o'clock show, you could be home by 9:30. We could watch an episode. So I ended up having to leave them behind because they were too busy to watch the show, and I was obsessed with it. So this October, a couple months ago, my husband and I were actually going to Atlanta to see a Cirque du Soleil performance. We love Cirque du Soleil shows. And we go pretty much anywhere we can within a reasonable distance. If they have a traveling show, we'll go. So we had planned to go to Atlanta. And I said, hey, while we're in Atlanta, Sonoya is only about 45 minutes, and that's where they filmed The Walking Dead. And so we could go and do a Walking Dead tour. And he said, okay. I didn't tell him at the time that it was a three-hour bus tour. I just kind of said Walking Dead tour. And so we went to Sonoya, charming little town, such a cute little town with lots of little, you know, antique shops and cafes and stores and things. And it was really funny. I thought we were going more for me and my obsession with the show. But as we arrived in town, we had booked a little Airbnb, and we were headed out of town, actually, to find the Airbnb. And all of a sudden, my husband sees the Gates of Alexandria, which is on the show where the main characters have been residing for the last few seasons. And he starts yelling, like, that's Alexandria! That's Alexandria! Oh, my gosh! And like, we were like, you would think we'd seen Elvis. Like, we were, like, you know, just laughing in the car and clapping our hands and, like, so excited. So that made me feel a little better that he was as excited to see this stuff as I was. And we ended up going on this bus tour that I highly recommend if you're a fan of the show. It did not seem like 3 hours. I know when I say three-hour tour, you're ready to cue the Gilligan music. But it was really very interesting. They had a video on the bus so they could show you scenes from the show, and then you could look out the window and obviously see where it had been filmed. They had interesting trivia about the set, about filming, about many other things that are filmed on location in Georgia. I knew that they did a lot of motion picture film and film production and filming in Georgia. One of the things that the tour guide said that really kind of struck me, if you're in Atlanta, within an hour, basically, you could be in the mountains, you could be over, you know, to the beach, you could be out in the countryside, you could be, you know, in a rural area, you could be in an urban area. So it's such a great location for them for filming. So I loved it. Like, it was great seeing a show that we're very passionate about and seeing the locations where they'd filmed it, but I loved the stories. I'm always very story-driven. So the stories of, like, things that had happened behind the scenes or things that happened while they were filming or the way that things went down on the set. So I loved it. I recommend it to anybody.
Well, see, that's my home state. I'm from Atlanta.
Okay.
So, yeah, he's right. Atlanta, Georgia, period, is a prime area to film. They filmed Deliverance on the Chattahoochee. And up in
yeah,
the
it's a beautiful state. All the Marvel movies have filmed there. Tyler Perry has his studios there. They've actually, not all the Marvel movies, actually, Deadpool did not film there. But and they've actually just constructed this huge water tank. From what they were telling us, and I haven't done my own research on this, but from what they were telling us, the only water tank of this size previously had been in, I think, either Arizona or New Mexico, and that's where everything had to be filmed if you needed huge water in the United States. And they've now built this water tank in Georgia, so they'll, you know, that they have another option. So it was fascinating to me. But I love anything with the movie industry, and like I said, I love anything that's story driven. I like the stories behind the story.
And that brings us to your story. See how I just whip right around that? and you have the most marvelous covers. Ladies and gentlemen, no, y'all can't go now and look at her covers. You got to wait. You've got Maggie, a Tales Behind the Veils novel. And then you have Diary of a Single Wedding Planner, Volume 1 in Tales Behind the Veils series. Diary of a Wedding Planner, Volume 2. Diary of an Engaged Wedding Planner. Now, how in the world, and then there's this other book called, let me get back up there to it, The Ghost in the Curve, which we'll get to. But when I was researching you, I was reading about your Tales Behind the Veils. Tell us about those.
Well, as I mentioned before, I was in event planning for about 15 years. And you have such a unique window as a wedding planner because you're seeing kind of behind the curtain a little bit. You know, you learn all about their family dynamics. You learn all about their love story. You learn a lot about their personality. You learn a lot about their spending habits. Like, there's so much. You almost become like an armchair, you know, therapist or psychologist when you're dealing with planning a wedding for someone. It's a very emotional time. It's a very exciting time. But there's also so much that goes on behind the scenes leading up to the day of and the day of. And so I had always wanted to write a story from the viewpoint of the wedding planner. So with these stories, with the wedding planner trilogy, it basically focuses on a wedding planner. And I wrote it in a diary format because I really wanted it to be how she was seeing things or what she was seeing. So it's a series of, like, wedding stories. She might be telling some crazy thing that happened to her, you know, while she was doing a wedding, like having a bride who needed help putting her pantyhose on, which is not something we normally do for other human beings, or, you know, opening a champagne bottle and having the cork hit her between the eyes and knocking her out while the wedding party's standing around her. So these different crazy things that would happen, but also kind of having her insight in looking at those events and looking at those stories of what was happening and how that shaped her view of love. I think a lot of us grow up with that fairy tale concept that there's going to be maybe not a literal knight in shining armor, but we expect that there's going to be the one, and that when the one comes, we'll immediately know, because obviously everything will be perfect and everything will be rainbows and you know, it'll be happily ever after automatically. And real life doesn't do that. And
nope.
So I wanted to kind of explore that with this wedding planner who's surrounded by love every day. She's surrounded by romance every day. Her job is literally sending people off to their happily ever after, but she doesn't have romance in her life, and she doesn't have love in her life, and she's kind of like, you know, giving up on that whole concept of, is there the one, or, you know, is that maybe a fairy tale? So that trilogy explores her journey from Diary of a Single Wedding Planner to being a wedding planner in love, but discovering that just because you fall in love, it doesn't go to happily ever after. We kind of think that we have once upon a time and then we go straight to happily ever after, but in all of the fairy tales, they had huge obstacles to overcome. There were villains, there were witches, there were dragons, there were, you know, sleeping spells, or there were all these different things that they had to overcome. And, you know, life does that to us, that we fall in love, but we don't just go straight to happily ever after. So that whole series explores weddings and kind of our fascination with romance and our fascination with happily ever afters, but also very much reality. I've had a couple of reviews that said that it was like a realistic view at love, and I like that because I think it's sometimes good to have a realistic view of what it really looks like.
Oh, I agree, because like you say, it's not all rainbows and lollipops. It's
right.
Trials and tribulations and disappointments and peaks and valleys. How did Maggie get in there?
Well, Maggie is the hero throughout the trilogy, the Wedding Planner trilogy, is Cabe. And Maggie is actually Cabe's mother. And as I was writing Cabe's story, and as more of Cabe's story was being revealed, I was fascinated by his mother. I was fascinated by her story. There's some things that have happened as Cabe was growing up that have definitely shaped who he is and shaped what he brings to the relationship, and some things that he has to overcome in order to be able to embrace love. And a lot of that tied into his mother and the relationships that she had and her relationship with love, or her understanding of love. So I really was fascinated with the character. I wanted to know more about her story. I wanted to give her a voice and allow her to tell her side of the story, because in the trilogy, we basically form our opinion of Maggie through her son's eyes. And so I wanted to give her own chance to tell her story. I also loved the idea of telling the story of an older heroine. When I met my husband, I was in my 30s, and I had already, unfortunately, had a marriage that I was not able to succeed with. I had a child. I had already, you know, been through a career change. And I think that when we approach love, when we're a little bit older and we have a little bit more life experience, we see things in a different way, and we have different vulnerabilities. We have different walls up. We have different things to overcome. And so I very much wanted to explore a heroine who was older. In this book, Maggie is 49. And so she's kind of looking back on life and decisions that she's made and things that she's put in place to kind of guard herself. And, you know, being able to open yourself up to love at 49 is much different than opening yourself to love at 19. So that was something I wanted to explore.
Could not agree more. I think that is an excellent way to help women of a certain age understand it's okay to love again.
Yes. Yeah, and traditionally our romance novels don't explore older heroines. Traditionally,
no,
romance novels, you know, stick with the younger girls. And I think that, you know, love definitely doesn't die when you reach 40 or when you reach 45 or 35 or 50 or even 60. And you know, sexuality doesn't die. Passion doesn't die. Self-esteem, like all of these issues, all of these things that are tied up in love don't go away because we reach a certain age or because we become wrinkled or because we have gray in our hair. So I think that being able to explore that a woman of 49 definitely still has all those feelings and definitely still has, you know, passion and still has romance and still has needs and wants and feelings. And so I wanted to explore that. I really like, I've heard it called a lot of things. My favorite term that I've heard it called is a seasoned romance. And I like that. I think looking at romance older is a nice point of view.
I like that terminology, a seasoned romance. I like that.
There's actually a Facebook group for seasoned romance, and it focuses on those books for heroines and heroes that are over 35, and kind of focuses on that, those later in life. Sometimes it's second chance romances that maybe they, you know, are meeting someone that they met when they were younger and kind of getting a second chance at that. Sometimes it's a second chance romance in that whatever first romance they had failed, and now they've, you know, gotten a new opportunity. But yeah, I really like that concept.
And
I think
it's funny that you said someone that they had met younger and it came back around, because my husband and I have known each other all of our lives, And the last time we saw each other was in 76 when my grandfather died, because we are second cousins. Well, in 2006, we came back around, and we've been together ever since.
See, and when you meet each other at 2006, you're different people.
Yes.
Than you were in 76 because of the things you've experienced.
Exactly.
And so I think that's such a great viewpoint to do with romance, with stories about romance, because all of those experiences have shaped who you are and who he is, and you connect differently older than you did when you were younger. You
and
know,
it's
so.
it's a more comfortable relationship because, number one, we knew each other all of our lives, and yeah, we did have different experiences and changed and matured, but we don't always feel like we have to be on our best behavior with one another.
Right. I think, too, that when you get older, you have experienced, usually you've experienced some heartache, you've experienced some disappointment, you've experienced some happiness, and so you have a little bit better idea of what you're looking for, of what you
mm-hmm.
want, of what you don't want, of what you're willing to do, what you're not willing to do, and kind of who you are and how much of that you're willing to give away. So I definitely think romance is approached differently the older we get.
Oh, I agree. I love it. No, ladies, y'all cannot go now. You got to wait, because there's another book she's got to talk about real quick, because we're going to run out of time. We're about 5 minutes from running out of time. But real quick, A Ghost in the Curve. What's that one?
Really quick. Ghost in the Curve, totally different thing. The Wedding Planner series is really more romantic fiction, romantic women's fiction or chick lit. The Ghost in the Curve it's a little bit of everything. It is romantic suspense, but it's also mystery. It's got humor. It's got some steamy scenes, not explicit scenes, but steamy scenes. And I love it. I absolutely love the story. I'm working on the second book in the series now, and I love these characters so much. And basically, our main character here is Sloane, who was a scream queen. She was a movie star from the age of 16 as a ghost slayer. And the studio has let her go at the age of 29 and told her she's too old to be a scream queen. So she's retreated to her aunt's remote little Florida cabin to kind of figure out life and what she's going to do next. She's never believed in ghosts, even though she played a ghost slayer on screen. But while she's at this cabin, she encounters this 16-year-old ghost named Chelsea. And it's not a scary story at all. It's not a horror story. Chelsea is a typical 16-year-old. She just happens to be a ghost. She's obsessed with Reese Witherspoon, and she's obsessed with pizza, and she's a teenager. She's a teenage girl. But the night that Chelsea died, there was a car accident, and the car that her mother was driving went in the lake, and unfortunately, Chelsea and her mother lost their life. The whole world believes that her 2-year-old brother died in the accident because his body was never recovered. However, Chelsea's ghost saw a woman stop at the scene of the accident and drive away with her 2-year-old brother. So
Ooh.
She's known for 13 years that her brother was kidnapped, but she's never been able to tell anyone. And now, for reasons that, you know, they don't understand, Sloane is able to hear Chelsea. And so Chelsea is finally able to tell someone the truth about what happened and ask for her help. But Sloane can't really go to the cops and be like, hey, the ghost in the curve told me that this little boy is alive and you need to go find him. So, you know, there's definitely a mystery there to solve, but there's also some suspense there. You know, as she starts kind of uncovering the mystery and figuring out what happened, her own life becomes in danger. And there's a little bit of romance there because there's, of course, a hot, handsome deputy. What small town doesn't have a hot, handsome deputy? And he's trying to decide whether or not to trust her because she's obviously hiding something because she can't tell him, you know, exactly what's going on. So there's a little bit of everything in this book. It's a little bit of romance, a little bit of mystery, a little bit of suspense, some paranormal, some humor. So
I definitely got to read that book. I have got to read that book.
Yeah.
No, y'all can't go yet because you're going to miss it all. Now, where can you be found? Because believe it or not, we're almost to the end of our hour.
Okay, I can be found on my website is violethowell.com, so that's probably the easiest way to find me. I'm, of course, on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, I'm on all of those as Violet Howe. My books are on Amazon, iBooks, Nook, Kobo, Google Play, pretty much anywhere that you can find books online, I'm there. So, but yeah, the easiest way is probably violethowell.com.
Well, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Would you be willing to come back?
Oh, most definitely. This has been so much fun. I would love to come back.
Good. Because with that being said, you will now become a regular on the show because you will gain a following on the show. People will want to know. Okay, because the magic word was I'm working on the second in the series. So
yes.
when is that one going to be ready?
I am frantically working to get it ready. I've got so many people that have been emailing me and messaging me asking for this book. So I know people want it, but I also want to make sure that, you know, the story is complete and really good. The title of the second one is going to be The Glow in the Woods. And it will have Sloane and Tristan, who are our hero and heroine in The Ghost in the Curve. And it will have Chelsea. A lot of people have asked me if Chelsea is going to be in the second book, and she will be. But there will be a whole new mystery for them to solve. So
okay, so you'll come back in June, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, yes. Don't hang up when the show goes dark because I have some things to tell you.
Okay.
But I do want to thank you ahead of time from the bottom of my heart for spending an hour with me. It has flown by so fast.
Well,
and
thank
I've
you
had
so much,
so
for
much fun.
Me.
I don't know if you've had fun, but I've had a lovely, lovely time.
Yes, I have. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome. No, ladies and gentlemen, y'all can't go yet. I'm sorry. You know there's things we say. Tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, blogger Donna Antonio will be here. She is a book blogger, and if you don't think book bloggers are important to us as indie artists, Donna will explain why they are. Next week, we start a whole new week on Wednesday night with author Jennifer Alderson. On Thursday night, Hanging with Webb show will be with us again with Garrett, Sage, and Dina. Friday night, I can't even read my own writing. I don't know who it is, but I'm sure I'll figure it out. And on Saturday night, Aileen Hart will be here. So Friday night's a mystery guest because I can't read my own writing. But all shows are at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And spread the word, ladies and gentlemen. Let's keep growing this show so our beautiful, beautiful artists can be heard in places like the Sudan and Egypt and South Africa and France and Italy and Greece, Brazil, Portugal, Spain. That just is a part of them. We're in over 100 countries now. So as we close the show, there are things that I always say, and one of them is don't just feel special, be special, because if you just feel special, you will never be special. And the difference between who you are today and who you want to be next week is what you do today. So if you want to change who you are, then you need to be changing what you do. If you want to achieve greatness, please stop asking permission because nobody's going to give it to you. They just won't. They want you to be down there in the pit with them. They don't want to achieve greatness, and they don't want you to either. And then your smile is your logo. Your personality is your business card. How you leave others feeling after having had an experience with you becomes your trademark. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, that is so, so true, especially this time of year. There are people shopping, they're short tempers, they're traveling, things just are out of sorts, people are in a hurry, people have places to be. So go out of your way to be kind to somebody because you don't know what journey they're traveling, and a smile might save their life. I'm telling you, you just have no clue. And until you've walked in that person's shoes, you have no idea what they're going through. So remember that people will forget your name, they will forget what you're wearing, they'll even forget what you look like. But they will never, ever, ever forget how you made them feel. And if you made them feel like they were the most important person in the room, they will carry that with them through thick and thin in the lowest points of their life. So once again, I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us tonight here on Off the Chain. And I want to thank Violet for being my guest. She is one of the most exciting ladies I have ever had the pleasure of talking to. And take her advice. If you're married and are even thinking about getting married, sign up for a year at a time because it gives you time to reflect. It gives you time to think about things. It gives you time to wipe the slate clean, so to speak. So until tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, where we will be interviewing book blogger Donna Antonio. This is Yvonne Mason and Off the Chain with my guest Violet Howe, and we both wish you a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful good evening. Okay, we're off the air, and everything we say now, we'll go. You'll hear it in the archive portion of the show. But what I wanted to tell you is when we get off the show here, it will go up into archives. And once it archives, I will go in and I'll put the link up on my page, and I'm going to tag you in it.
Okay.
This is my gift to you. You take that link and you spread it everywhere. Put it on your blog, send it out to your network, put it on Twitter, put it everywhere. And then tomorrow I will put it up on podcast.com, Podcast Garden, SoundCloud, Mixcloud, and Spreaker. I will also tag you in those links. Those are also my gift to you to share with everybody so that you can get out there even more than you are. And if you share it on your Facebook page, if you will put hashtags, if you noticed on when I was sharing the link tonight, there was always hashtags and then
right.
Okay, if you share it using hashtags and you're integrated with Twitter on your Facebook account, it will automatically show up on Twitter, and anybody pulling up those tags, it will automatically pull that up.
Okay.
So take that and enjoy it, and thank you so much. I hope you had as much fun as I did.
I did. Thank you so much for having me. I would love to come back anytime.
Okay, my darling. I will put you down for June. I'll send you some dates, and we'll get you in, and by then the glow in the wood should be out, and who knows, you may be working on another book.
Yes, hopefully so.
Or you may be taking another trip back up to Sonoma, Georgia.
Thank you so much.
All right, sweetheart. Thank you, and we'll talk later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.